This podcast is brought to you by Men's Tea Clinic. One visit can change your life. Men's Tea Clinic offers a variety of men's wellness programs to help you meet your goals and keep you as strong as you've ever been. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-TEA today or visit menstclinic.com. That's menstclinic.com.
The second pick will be made by the San Antonio Spurs, and that means that the number one pick in the 2025 NBA draft goes to the Dallas Mavericks.
Holy crap. Good morning, Metroplex. It's a great morning. You deserve it. You may not think that Nico necessarily does, but we have the number one pick in the NBA draft. The first time ever that the Mavericks have moved up, rigged or not. It looks like Cooper Flagg is joining a built to win now team. It's Sean Sharif, RJ Choppy, and Bobby Bell back together again. We got Peyton and Aiden in the back. We're live on the fan cam, Twitch, and YouTube here on DFW Sports Station. Thanks for being a Tolo. And in order to hook you up, we got Rangers tickets during the 720 Expressway. Are we absolutely sure, RJ Choppy, Mr. College Basketball Lover, that Cooper Flagg is the guy? Is he a generational talent? Gavin Dawson concerned that he could be a little bit more Robin than Batman. You see some Scottie Pippen comparisons. What do you think?
Well, he's absolutely the guy. Is he generational? I don't know if he's generational. Generational is LeBron James. Generational is Wemby. You know, that's generational.
Luka.
But yeah, but coming into the draft, like, that wasn't necessarily thought of as like, all right, this is the absolute, he's a great player. Generational, though. Look, if you told me you're getting Scottie Pippen with the first overall pick, I'm totally fine with that.
Hell yeah.
Like, you know, you don't have to be the number one option to be the top overall pick and be successful. Like, you've got to be, you know, like Kyrie Irving. Kyrie wasn't oftentimes the number one option on teams he's played on, but he was a quality overall number one pick. So, yeah, I think that this is absolutely the number one guy. The other options, obviously, you have Ace, you got Dylan Harper. But yeah, this is pretty set that he is the top dog.
Yeah, I mean, I think at this point it's been pretty clear that he's there was some talk at the beginning of the year like, hey, don't just hand this over to Cooper Flagg right away. Like, you can't just say he's slam dunk number one. But I think we've probably been sitting on this for what, 3 months roughly, where people have decided, yeah, this is the guy. Yeah. This isn't a case of a few years ago where like when Paolo Banchero went number one, like there was talk leading up to it of who was going to go number one, and there was some debate and some discussion, and ultimately Banchero went number one. But this is something where everybody's kind of coalesced around the idea that, hey, this is the guy.
And what a year to win it too, right? If Cooper Flagg is that good, it really does help that you're familiar with him, whether that's American name, Duke basketball program. This is not last year when no one in the room can probably tell me who went number one to Atlanta.
Ricochet, right? Was it Ricochet?
Mm-hmm.
Yep, Ricochet. Imagine lucking out like this and getting that. Mm-hmm. I don't even know what he did last year. Maybe he had a good season.
Yeah. He's okay.
The kid with Sarr went two from France.
Yeah, I think. Sure.
Alex Sarr, I don't know. Wasn't it?
But
whatever.
It could be one of those years. Right now, you didn't get Wemby with the draft lottery result. But what are they saying about Cooper Flagg compared to other number one picks?
So this has been a discussion over the last month or so where people are trying to figure out, all right, like, you know, just in general NBA message board areas, places where, you know, different NBA writers are chiming in, trying to figure out, all right, where does he stack up against some of the other guys that we've seen go number one recently? And just yesterday over at Yahoo, it was Morten Stig Jensen, their 20-year NBA writer over there, who tried to basically stack Cooper Flagg over against the last 10 number one picks. So basically, where does he rank out of 11 guys? So he kind of works backwards and he starts with 2024. This is just as what they were as prospects coming out. Hype, what they were thought they could turn into, different things like that. So 2024, Zachary Ricochet from the Atlanta Hawks, he gives the edge to Flagg. He says he's a forward like Flagg, his size is comparable, but there were comparisons. That's pretty much where the comparisons end. Flagg is stronger, more athletic, and his defensive game is already levels ahead. So you got one guy ahead there. 43, Victor Wembanyama. That's the most hyped prospect over the last decade.
All right,
so,
Woj.
Wembanyama. All right, I said decade. I did not say in the history of sports and everything else. 2022, Paolo Banchero, Orlando Magic. They say this is a better comp, and this is a comp you've seen thrown around a lot just because it's a Duke forward who's kind of got two-way ability, who people look at and go, okay, there's some similarities in the way that they play. But again, Boncaro was not the universal number one guy heading into that draft.
And Boncaro has to be a better scorer than Flagg, at least early on. Boncaro can score. I've seen some, like, the scoring could come along. The reports I've read and heard kind of have Cooper's defense a little bit ahead of his offense right now.
Yeah, and Cooper is like, it's like Laura from Grapevine called and said last hour. He is kind of like a distributor too. He looks for guys and he wants to distribute the basketball. But like if you look at their per 40 minutes, Boncaro and Flagg are sort of similar in what they put up while they were at Duke. But they give the edge to Cooper Flagg in terms of right now being a bigger prospect over Boncaro. Cade Cunningham. Now this is where you saw the internet kind of push back against this list. Cade Cunningham, Oklahoma State, went to the Detroit Pistons, has turned into a really good player. He gives the minor advantage to Cunningham as a prospect coming out. I remember there being a lot of people wondering about, like, hey, is this kind of a weak draft with Cade Cunningham at the top? And that's kind of how the internet is remembering this one and saying, no, Flagg definitely has more buzz around him than Cade Cunningham did. But still, it's one that
buzz. Cade had, I mean, comparatively speaking,
or just what their projection was as a player.
Yeah, because you're never going to get more buzz than a Duke player in general.
2020 Anthony Edwards. I think a lot of people forget now that Anthony Edwards was considered far from a slam dunk. Like he was, there were people like he wants to play football. He doesn't even love basketball. Why in the world would you ever take Anthony Edwards? And so Edwards is probably really low on this list, actually, of guys that people were banking on as being a superstar.
If I remember right, he didn't even get his team to the tournament.
I don't remember.
I don't even think Georgia made the tournament that year.
2019, Zion Williamson. That's Zion all day. Zion was, again, one of these big, the guys that you consistently see definitively on every list, everybody has Zion and Wembanyama ahead of Cooper Flagg. Then there's some debate behind that. So 2018, DeAndre Ayton. Remember, there's some talk early on about, was it Bagley or Ayton, or could somebody take Luka? And, you know, that sort of discussion in 2018. So Ayton, again, was sort of just specific to what the Suns needed, what they were looking for. Cooper Flagg projected as a stronger prospect coming out. This is another one that's really interesting. 2017 and 2016, the Sixers had back-to-back first round or number one overall picks. Markelle Fultz goes in 2017. Ben Simmons goes in 2016. The comparison here, he says Flagg is ahead of one of these guys and behind the other in terms of projection. So obviously the way I'm setting it up, you would probably go the opposite direction. But he says Fultz was a better prospect coming out and Flagg is better than Simmons. But that indirectly saying that Simmons was a worse prospect than Fultz, which I don't remember anybody jumping on board with at all. Everybody thought Ben Simmons was, he
young
can develop
LeBron.
Shooting, he can be LeBron. If he can fill out, he can be LeBron. So the only other name here after that is Karl Anthony Towns, who from a hype perspective, from a projection perspective, people view Cooper Flagg as a better player. So really the only questions you have right now are, it's definitively Zion, it's definitively Wembanyama, and then there's a question of, all right, is he right there roughly with Ben Simmons? I think Simmons is probably ahead of him, just remembering how the discourse was going about Simmons when he was coming out. There were questions, though, about could he ever shoot, and that's something that you know Flagg can shoot at least well enough, and so he's at least right there in the discussion for the third or fourth best prospect over the last decade.
OG Wade, never shy with opinions, tweeting us, Cooper Flagg is a generational, no question. Have you watched him? What are we talking about here? He's been the guy since day one.
He has been the guy since day one. I don't know. The term generational, I save. I just
for Wemby.
For Wemby, yeah. But yeah, this is no doubt. He has been the top guy. He was the top. You knew he was going to be the overall number one pick in the draft when he was still in high school.
There was still question about Harper at the start of the year. Like when you go back to the start of the year, there was question. It was not as solidified as Wembanyama was. But, I mean, yeah, he's been the odds-on favorite, but there was more of a question. It was something that solidified really in the last 3 months.
Okay, yesterday the news broke at 6:40 here on the show that the Cowboys will be taking on the Eagles in the NFL opener as Filthy raises the banner and Bradley Cooper and all those others celebrate their championship won. Bobby, your first reaction to Cowboys-Eagles Thursday night?
Boy, that is not going to sit well, I don't think, with Jerry, I would guess. Like, I mean, he loves being up there. I just don't think he's going to want to be there for banner night necessarily. Here, come sit in attendance as we raise up another banner. I'm sure the Eagles love it. They love the idea of just being able to raise the banner and hand out rings and do whatever else they're going to do on a national stage to get the season going up against the Cowboys. So, I mean, they've obviously earned the chance to gloat and to dance on you a little bit, but My first thought of that was that's probably got to sting a little for Jerry.
And Choppy, sorry, we got more scheduling news pouring in.
We do. They are announcing the Eagles basically one by one because of the champs. So obviously they have our game on the 4th against the Cowboys, the Eagles on September 4th, Thursday Night Football. November 10th, Monday Night Football, Philly at Green Bay. On the 28th is a Friday of November, Chicago at Philly. And on December 20th, Saturday, Philly at Washington.
So that's the, is that the Black Friday game then? Yeah, that's the Black Friday 28th, game.
Yeah.
And throughout the rest of the league, the Chiefs asked for Christmas, they got Christmas.
Did they, is that a bit announced they got Christmas? I didn't see that one.
Look, this is one of those things that I have fallen out of love with, schedule releasing. I can't keep track of it all. If you saved it all for one night and the big entire schedule came out, that's cool.
But you don't like the leak?
I don't like the leak. I can't keep track of it. I'm like, all right, I know we're going to face the East. I already know the opponents. I wish they actually saved. I know the formula is already there.
Yeah.
I wish they actually saved, like, who you're going to be facing division-wise.
Yeah.
And I didn't know that formula.
They should, like.
All right, like, I already know who they're going to face. This is the order.
The next realignment they do, because they will do a realignment again at some point. They should just keep all that secret. By the way, yeah, you're right. It is Broncos Chiefs Christmas Day.
I mean, honestly, though, if you want to talk about, there is still the question of they've baked it in, I think, at this point. But, I mean, there's the question of who's your bonus rolling team, your 17th game. And, I mean, they could lean into that a little bit more. But the schedule release is, like, the one thing I feel like the NFL has failed to blow up the way that when they get their machine behind something to blow it up, they usually do. The schedule release is one where I feel like it doesn't have the same power as what they'd like it to be.
Stephen Jones was on with SiriusXM yesterday, and he was asked about trading for their new number two.
Well, first of all, we look at him, it's just two starting receivers out there. We don't necessarily even think we take him as more than a two when we were looking at the deal. Certainly, we looked at the draft, in terms of scratching an itch. Seeing what might be available there in the draft, but here you get a guy who's got experience, who's had great success in the NFL, obviously a tremendous competitor. He reminds a lot in our building of Dez Bryant in terms of, his competitiveness and, what he brings to the field, his edge. And, we were looking at the draft as a way to look at, filling that need when it didn't happen. We had some opportunities around the league that we were looking at, and this one, at the end of the day, made the most sense.
Yeah, look, I mean, that's something that they've lacked sincerely for a while. That's something that I think they thought they were going to get bringing Zeke back. It's like, oh, we're going to get the competitive edge Monday through Saturday. We're going to get the practice intensity. He's going to level guys up. There are questions about George Pickens' maturity. There are questions about does he have a tendency to pout at times if he's not involved? There's not a question about does he get intense and competitive. The answer to that is 100% yes. He is going to go out there. He will be leveling up practices when we're in Oxnard. There is likely to be a shoving match involving George Pickens while we're out there in Oxnard.
And they're talking about no more all in. They're not going to use it. I didn't really understand this with Albert Breer, who talked to Steven RJ.
So the term all in, they're done.
We'll be all in.
They're done with the term all in. But here's the thing,
Jerry loves to drop it sarcastically, though. He's not going to be done with
especially it. Especially on Clarence. He loves to dunk on Clarence with it.
So
be careful. Clarence a little sensitive these days.
Steven Jones told Albert Breer, I don't buy into all that about the all-in. He goes, name me one person that isn't all-in. I'd hate the fans to hear their owners say that people aren't all-in. When you're competing in the NFL, it's kind of a joke. Every year we line up, we're moving our chips in. So they're done using it. They're just saying, we're not going to use the term anymore because this
is
what we are.
That's not what I just said.
That's just what we are, which, what does that even mean? Like, you get... This is part of the problem with this franchise is that they're always trying to be all in. And they never want to rebuild. They at the end of Troy Aikman, like, oh, it's straight two first for Joey Galloway. And then the only reason why Parcells was even remotely able to restock the franchise is because they were so bad for 3 years that they got the picks. Oh, wow. And then you had decades of stability with a roster that was solid because you were able to do that. You've got to sometimes take a step back.
I don't know that always being all in is their problem. Last year felt like they weren't in enough.
Always trying to stay relevant. How about that?
Yeah. Is there a chance that the Dallas Mavericks just got the next Scottie Pippen, Kawhi Leonard. Who else is Cooper Flagg being compared to by ESPN's draft analysts? That will join us at 8:40 this morning, but we'll take you through all the different comps to get you excited for your brand new Mav plus a Rangers 4-pack giveaway as we go commercial-free with the Expressway next.
This podcast is brought to you by Men's Tea Clinic. One visit can change your life. Men's Tea Clinic offers a variety of men's wellness programs to help you meet your goals and keep you as strong as you've ever been. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-TEA today or visit menstclinic.com. That's menstclinic.com.
All right, we are commercial free. Buckle up, a loaded Tolo Tuesday edition here on DFW Sports Station. I had thrown the computer on the couch, getting ready to chill with the kids, and then the Mavs start sneaking up. Amanda takes Ava upstairs. She walks back down, stops mid-flight on the steps as they made the announcement that the Dallas Mavericks have the number one pick, and then boom, detonation. And I'm on the couch for the next few hours happily because we needed this. You needed this, and we needed this, and I know that the Dallas Mavericks organization needed it as well. Sean, RJ, and Bobby back together again, commercial-free expressway with a Rangers ticket giveaway coming up.
Whichever members of the Mavericks ticket sales staff stayed and didn't quit is loving today. They needed this big time. The fan base obviously did, but the people in the building did as well. And now it's just about don't screw it up. You know, don't screw it up. And there's, you know, there's obviously a couple of different avenues that they're going to be able to have. But this was tremendous theater. It really was. Like the moment that they got to 11, and I think it was it Portland they put in there or something. I was like, oh my God, it's happening. It is happening.
And what percentage of doubt is everyone in the room having that it was or was not rigged? Are you 100 or 99%?
Yeah, I mean, I'll leave a little open that this is the, you know, I'll tell you this. I'm 98.2% positive that this was rigged. And now the 1.8% is what the Mavs odds were.
Well done. By the way, speaking of playing around with numbers, someone had a Fire Nico jersey, apparently, and Luka signed it. Signed it in the 77, and that is now like up for auction. So I expect to see a lot of 1.8 jerseys out there.
I got to say, I'm trying to think. Chop, how many times do we hit the tankathon simulation?
All the time.
I think maybe you got number one once. I never got number one. We hit the thing a thousand times and never got it. So that's the only thing that makes me go, this seems so improbable and unlikely. I don't understand how it's possible. But, I mean, truth is stranger than fiction, I guess, would be the case. So, I don't know. I'm 50-50. I keep debating myself back and forth.
You're 50-50?
I'm 1,000% in my soul. That's where I'm at. I'm 1,000% in my soul. I can't believe they'd be that, like, brazen with it. That's the thing that I just can't wrap my head around.
And how many people know to keep it a secret like this for all the years? That's another thing that's hard to believe. Is it the commissioner, the deputy commissioner, and that's it? Like, how many people are going to keep this a secret? That's where I always start to question conspiracy theories.
That's where you do run into a kind of a roadblock with any conspiracy theory. You have to be able to keep it a secret. Now, in terms of the Kennedy assassination, it's like, well, a lot of people just died. Like, weird deaths. You know, like, very strange deaths, like, really quick.
Yeah.
But in this, it's like, all right, it's got to be such a small number of people. The Ernst & Young dude knows, the deputy commissioner, and then Silver.
They
and
can, like, both be bought off. That's not a problem.
Yeah.
What's 2-3 guys to pay
And then
off?
If you start to talk, what is it? What happens to every whistleblower? They try to discredit you somehow. Oh, he's losing his mind. He's kooky.
Pepe, do you think the fix was in?
Yeah, last night solidified it. I mean, I was a believer before, you know, like, there's no way they actually rig it. But, I mean, now you're thinking the integrity of the game is on the line with all the, you know, people throwing games, stuff like that. But, yeah, it's 100% rigged now.
Yeah, I wonder overall this harms the league.
Yeah, like, that's the thing is that would they have been better off if they were really going to rig it, wouldn't they rig it for two? Because it seems a little too obvious to rig it for one, because now you've got number one. Whereas you could just say, we'll rig it for two. We can trade two for Giannis. We'll work something out for y'all that's not nearly as obvious.
Right, right.
Whereas one, it's like literally everyone, including people who cover the league, are going like, well, yeah, this definitely looks rigged. This looks fixed.
Because rigged is going to be the top story over Cooper Flagg today.
Oh, it was trending all night. But here's the thing. does it even, and I think this is where the league is like, does it even matter? You know, the NFL is like, we do what we want. You know, we blackballed Colin Kaepernick. Does it really even matter? You know, like, does it even matter? Like, people are still going to watch.
Well, it doesn't matter because the National Football League, everybody watches. The NBA has not had that same luxury.
No, it hasn't, but.
They don't have the NFL success, so they can't just say we're going to do whatever we want.
Yeah, they don't have.
But we've already thought the league was rigged to begin with, and they just got $76 billion for over 11 years for TV contracts. You know, they did the same thing with the Ewing, and then, you know, there's also the Tim Donaghy situation, Dick Bavetta. I'm here to get the series back to L.A. or whatever the phrase was.
Yeah.
Like the league has survived this, and they're like, it just doesn't matter because people are still going to watch because as long as the games, as long as we don't think the games are rigged,
right,
then it doesn't matter.
Which a lot of people do still believe the games are rigged. I want to hear what Jay Williams has to say about what the Mavs should do. Jay Williams, number one pick, Duke Blue Devil on the Mavs fortune.
You have to be reasonable and just see what the market can offer you for somebody like Cooper Flagg. And look, I think Cooper Flagg is a hell of a player. He's a two-way player, actually. I think he could fit with Dallas very well. I just wonder if he can give it to you right now because your window's short.
But you might not need it right now. Think about it. Kyrie Irving is going to miss most of next season. So your window might not even be next season. Your window might be two seasons from now.
Is he?
Which is when he'll have a year experience under his belt. Your mentality is why the Detroit Pistons passed on Carmelo Anthony because they thought they were in
Don't compare me to the Detroit Pistons.
Well, I'm just saying, they were in a championship window. They didn't think that was the right kind of fit. They wanted to get a big man. How'd that work out?
I mean,
out?
Cleveland got Andrew Wiggins, and they got Kevin Love, and they won a championship.
Man, I don't know how much I want to hear about a window. I don't care about Nico's window. Draft the best player. Draft the one who is going to make the most all-star teams. Let's just simplify it. Or, as we'll get into at 8 o'clock, you win your championship now with Giannis, AD, hopefully Kyrie for the next 3 to 4 years. Because that really is what Nico's objective is and probably what the front office's objective is. This was a rare moment in sports time where a city in a Metroplex said, we'd rather just have our guy for 15 years without a title than trade for a championship if it happens in the next 2 years. That is not something you grow up thinking about as a sports fan. I didn't. It's supposed to be about titles. It's supposed to be about rings. It's supposed to be about championships. The Luka trade changed that thinking and mindset in my head with the way that DFW responded.
Yeah, and I wonder, does if they were to just select Cooper Flagg and sign him and he's here and he's a Dallas Maverick, I wonder if that's the first indicator of what like McMahon's talked about, which is there's going to be checks on Nico now. Because if Nico really is in this for 3 years, there's not a reason to take Cooper Flagg.
Right.
You trade the pick and you go get Giannis or whoever else.
By the time he is ready to play, ready to win, Nico's out the door. And so is Anthony Davis.
So is
Kyrie.
If it was completely up to Nico, I would feel like they're probably trading the pick. And so if they don't, then that makes me wonder, all right, are there some sort of checks and balances in there? Or does Nico just not push because he doesn't feel like he has the cachet right now to make that happen?
All right, Bobby, you went and dug up a comp article. I love these types of things. I know Nick Harris and others, they don't like to comp people. It's fun. It's sports. To me, that's what it's all about. It's entertainment. Jeremy Wu, the lead draft analyst from ESPN, and he's going to join us at 8:40 this morning. Let's have some fun with some names before Ask Reddit.
Yeah, he wrote this article last month, and basically ESPN had gone out. They talked to NBA executives and scouts, and they came up with 5 comparisons for Cooper Flagg and his developing offensive skills, versatility, and defensive prowess. Player comps, he writes, though often divisive, are inextricable from how prospects are discussed among scouts. While imperfect, they can be useful in setting expectations and envisioning roles a player might grow into. One Western Conference executive said, I want to know, worst case scenario, if we're using a pick on this guy, give me someone who made the league who he reminds you of. So these are the 5 player comps that they came up with. Before we get to those comps, really quickly, Cooper Flagg last month was talking to GQ Sports, and he was asked, hey, who do you kind of model your game after? And this was his comparison.
I think somebody I've said for a while is like Jason Tatum, like offensively, like the way he changes his pace, uses his body. Defensively, I watched Jonathan Isaacs a lot from Orlando, and just the way he's versatile, you know, guarding. I think that he just uses his body really well to block shots and then just cover ground and be able to sit down and guard guards. So those are two that I really liked watching this past year.
Yeah, Tatum offensively and Jonathan Isaac defensively. If you get that, that's a top 10 player.
Hell yeah.
So that's a really good player. So, all right, let's see what these comps are from NBA scouts and executives. The ceiling comp is Kawhi Leonard. This is the NBA front office take from a Western Conference scout. Flagg's really good defensively and can be a game changer on that end pretty much immediately with his size, effort, and IQ. He's always been a very good defender, and the offense is coming along. It's a very similar path to the one Kawhi was on early in his NBA career as a guy who had all these really useful qualities and then entered as a real two-way force as he rounded out his game. So after they get the comp from the executives, Jeremy Wu kind of does a breakdown. So he says, where do the similarities start between Kawhi Leonard and Cooper Flagg? He says, Leonard became in the NBA, an effective perimeter scorer who could take on any matchup defensively at his peak, would be a fantastic outcome for Flagg. There are stylistic similarities between them. On the offensive end, neither plays the prettiest style with the ball in his hands, but they each rely on balance and footwork in the mid-range, make plays for teammates, and would rather attack the basket and go downhill than settle for three-point shots. Okay, so where do the similarities
end? I love hearing that, by the way.
Yeah, that's all positive stuff.
You're not just going to sit back there and jack up threes. Yep. I know it's a three-point league. Yes, it opens you up to injury more if you're going to keep driving, but keep putting the ball on the floor, going inside. You're 6'9". I liked hearing that.
Yeah, you mentioned that was the thing that looked most different about Luka after he was gone. Like when he went to L.A., is it looked like he was a guy that was just settling for jump shots.
Yeah, because I mean, a lot of times teams, that's what they want. That the teams are like, hey, just do this.
It's also easier as a player.
Yeah.
Where the similarities end, it said Leonard had a once-in-a-generation type of developmental arc. Unpolished as a power forward, he evolved into a two-way wing dynamo and finals MVP. His accomplishments and outlier growth trajectory make Leonard a tricky comp. He says, to Flagg's credit, he's well ahead of where Leonard was entering the NBA in terms of offensive comfort level and on-court success. And at a younger age, he said, while player development is unpredictable, that bodes well for Flagg's future as a scorer. He said Leonard had a more developed upper body with a 7'3 wingspan. Flagg is taller and not nearly as built as Kawhi Leonard was. All right, the next comp. This is the floor. This is the very basement. If he essentially busts, this would be the player that he becomes as a bust. Lamar Odom. Western Conference executive says,
I mean,
as a floor, that's really
pretty
good.
High. That's what he's saying.
Literally, it's pretty high.
Just the ease and comfort level handling the ball on the perimeter. This is a Western Conference executive. We talk about whether guys are inside players who develop outside or perimeter players who take their game down low. Flagg has had such comfort on the perimeter. Odom filled out and was a late growth spurt guy with ball skills. You love a guy who at 6'10 can play with the facility of being a 6'3 guard. So, that's, again, really positive. They talk about where the similarities start. They say Odom as a low-end comparison captures the intrinsic value of Flagg's versatility. If Flagg plateaued as a scorer, his ability to function as a point forward, make plays for teammates, and engender flexibility in the lineups played around him would still be additive. Now, where the similarities end, they say that Flagg's developmental trajectory is on track to surpass Odom's production in the NBA. So that's good. Positive.
If you tell me that the floor of the pick is Lamar Odom, you have no excuse not to take him number one.
Cooper Flagg is going to be a better offensive scorer. He's going to be a better scorer than Lamar Odom, in my opinion. You can just see it. Lamar, I thought of as an initiator. He was perfect for Phil Jackson, being a 6'10" point guard, basically. Handles, passing, all that stuff. Cooper Flagg, in my opinion, is and will be a better scorer than Lamar.
All right, so those are the first two comps. So we're going through
This podcast is brought to you by Men's Tea Clinic. One visit can change your life. Men's Tea Clinic offers a variety of men's wellness programs to help you meet your goals and keep you as strong as you've ever been. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-TEA today or visit menstclinic.com. That's menstclinic.com.
Again, NBA draft analyst Jeremy Wu's comp article that he wrote for Cooper Flagg last
month. How exciting
is
this? We're sitting here talking about
this is very exciting.
Number one pick comparisons for a guy that you already know. And then the youth on top of it.
Oh, yeah. He is. So we were just talking about this during the break. Time that he gets drafted from, like, on draft day, he'll be 18 years, 6 months, and 4 days. That is 9 months younger than Luka was the day he was drafted.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, you're talking about, yeah. Now, obviously, the Luka trajectory still is something that if he were to achieve that, that would be still exceeding expectations. But, I mean, you're talking about a lot of youth as well and a lot of upside. So Jeremy Wu continues on his survey of NBA front office executives and scouts looking for comparisons for Cooper Flagg. His in his prime comp, and this is the name we just heard Cooper Flagg invoke, is Jason Tatum. The NBA front office take, this is from another Western Conference executive. He says both of them at Duke presented really positively as guys that were going to have a couple of off-ramps to be super successful. We're seeing that with Flag recently. He's had poor shooting nights like against Alabama in the Elite Eight. He was still super impactful towards winning. People questioned both of their shots, which turned out to be a silly concern probably. They both have a really good feel offensively in a way that's just uncommon for their size and usage. So where do those similarities start? Flag and Tatum are similar, with the former listed an inch taller and both measuring with 6'11 wingspans. They were both rigid and mechanical jump shooters in high school, particularly from three-point range. Tatum's balanced high-volume offensive profile with the Celtics shows how Flag could grow into a similar role. Where the similarities end? Stylistically, Flag and Tatum were much different as college freshmen. One of Tatum's weaknesses as a prospect was his shot selection and limited passing acumen, and it took time for him to change his style.
And that's for Tatum?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Cooper Flag can pass.
Flag is a more accomplished playmaker for others, more than doubling Tatum's assists per game at Duke, and the passing figures to be more central into his offensive value in the NBA. Flag's shot selection is a bit more team-friendly, but while he has made strides creating his own shot in the half court, Tatum was more polished. Now, the second star comp, this is the Robin angle that Gavin Dawson had tweeted about. The second star comp is Scottie Pippen. An Eastern Conference general manager said, "I say Scottie because he could have been a number one guy and was after MJ left, but he became by far the best number two. I think Cooper will be a hell of a number two, but he might need a top 10 player running mate with him. He can obviously prove me wrong, but I don't see him as a number one guy on a championship team in his career." So before we get to the similarities and the issues here, you're rubbing your hands together. That seems like it excites you, though, to have a guy who's just a really good number two. I'm saying that's positive, though. We're not downplaying that.
No.
Well, Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, right? Like, Jaylen Brown is technically the number two there in Boston.
Mm-hmm.
But
sometimes he has to be the number one.
According to Nico, you could trade Luka because of what Jaylen Brown does defensively. What I'm seeing and hearing is lack of ego, but still some dog. If this kid is fine with his role, again, we need to find out about his personality, but you watch him play, there's some dog in him that may lead him to be a number one. And if he doesn't have the selfishness where he's like, no, I am Batman, and he's fine playing that role with Kyrie Irving and Anthony Davis, that feels perfect.
Yeah, and Jeremy Wu says, the reality is Pippen was a more dynamic athlete. He was able to bully defenders with physicality in transition. He was able to go down in the post better than Cooper Flagg is. But he said that Flagg's feel and perimeter skills are well ahead of Pippen, who began as a walk-on at Central Arkansas. The fact that Flagg is a much better shooter already suggests he might surpass Pippen's offensive impact, although that doesn't guarantee Flagg will turn into a true number one scorer.
And I know we hate Nico for it, going to the phrase over and over. I never hate, just like I said with the Cowboys before the draft, I'm never going to kill you for drafting stud offensive linemen. I'm never going to be that upset when I see defense in your profile. In today's NBA, especially with, you know, the Luka concerns, Kyrie older, I know that you already have a defensive team there with Lively and PJ and the big fellas down under and Lively, Gafford, and then PJ out there on the perimeter. I love seeing that this guy is not just a defensive hole and he's got offensive game. I like that. Well, if he feels like, I don't want to say role player because that's a little insulting, but it feels like a perfect piece you could throw into a win now team.
Yeah. I mean, and that's what Dallas feels like they're trying to be right now, is to just maximize everything right now. Now, the final comparison is an out of left field comp, but it's apparently one that was made pretty frequently. Andre Kirilenko.
Okay, I'll take that.
All AK-47.
Wow. So he's going to have like the
you forever hall pass? Pass.
Yeah,
hall pass.
Yeah, forever hall pass.
Yes. One of the all-time great fantasy basketball players.
Oh, I thought you were about to talk about the question.
Oh, fantasy. We had fantasy going on there too.
The NBA front office take, a Western Conference exec says, Kirilenko led the NBA in blocks. I don't see Flag doing that. Kirilenko had the energy to expend more on the defensive end because he was a role player offensively. Kirilenko doing three blocks a game at his peak as a non-center is incredible in an era where there weren't as many possessions, but you project Flag to be much more meaningful on the offensive end. They say this was a comp that was thrown around frequently with Flag prior to the season. His mentality and impact on the offensive end of the floor led many scouts to invoke the 2000 2004 All-Star from Russia, who is one of the better defenders in the NBA. They say the similarities end, though, because the more we've learned about Flagg, the less this comp makes sense. Kirilenko was far behind Flagg offensively at a similar stage and peaked at a place where right now people feel like Cooper Flagg should reach.
Pepe, what team did AK-47 play for?
Careful.
No idea.
Yep.
Too young.
Too young.
Too young for it.
What's that, like 08?
Utah Jazz.
The Utah Jazz. Well done. Bobby, finding the article for all the Cooper Flagg comps. And the more you watch them, I think the more you're going to fall in love with them, especially some of that dog. There's also kind of a poor man's dream team story going around with some video that he went up against the Olympic team and like almost single-handedly dealt with them himself. Those stories that keep floating around.
Yeah, it's like the Luka practice stories, which I'm not going to invoke Luka too much. We can all just be happy about Cooper Flagg today, potentially, without probably invoking the Luka name. But yeah, just the ultra competitive and aggressive kind of mindset that says I'm an alpha and I'm going to win here.
All right, dealing the pick for Giannis at 8. PP in the morning with the new intro at 8:20. Jeremy Wu, the man who came up with all the different Cooper scouting reports from ESPN at 8:40. We got a Dallas Stars guest to get you ready for Game 4 tonight and the Red Zone. No reason to go anywhere else, especially when we hook you up like this.
All right, Tolo's right now. Call on number 10 at 877-881-1053. Wins a 4-pack of tickets to see the Texas Rangers and Blue Jays play Tuesday, May 27th at Globe Life Field in Arlington. And you'll want to get the early Tolo's because the first 15,000 fans in the stadium will also receive a Bruce Bochy World Series Parade bobblehead. That's call on number 10 at 877-881-1053.
It is the Expressway. We are commercial-free every day. Bobby Belt is back for one of your favorite segments.
Do you have a question, Kelly?
Yeah, I have a lot of questions. Number one, how dare you?
It is time for Ask Reddit, as we do it every Tuesday here during the Expressway. We ask the most viral questions off the Ask Reddit forum, the 55 million member forum, where they kick around salacious and controversial questions and thought-provoking things, and we'll get your answers on the Frankel & Frankel Injury Attorneys fan text, 877-881-1053, 877-881-1053. We'll also get your answers over on the YouTube, so Gregory, Jameson Taylor, we'll get your thoughts, and on the Twitch, so One Love TX and all the folks over there on the Twitch, we'll hear from you guys. All right, first question here, RJ Choppy.
Bobby Belt.
You curse your enemy, but it can only slightly inconvenience them. What would it be?
Oh, I'd force them to, go on a flight to Australia with nothing. They call it the raw dog in flight.
Yeah,
sitting between Clarence Hill and Mike Fisher the whole time.
but just one time.
Just one. Yeah, because
you're
one
cursing
time.
Them.
All right, that's fine. Okay, so I had a buddy. He had a pooping disease. Every time he ate, he had 15 minutes before all hell broke loose. Okay, and literally 15 minutes. I worked with him, and as soon as he would go back on his shift, immediately we had to run to the bathroom. Wow. That disease for eternity. Every time you eat, you've got 15 minutes before you are in the bathroom.
That's pretty good. All right, so the one I came up with, and I don't know if this is slightly inconvenient. I feel like this is pretty inconvenient, but as I was thinking about it, I was like, you catch every stoplight.
Ooh.
Every single stoplight for the rest of your life, as you're going up to it, it will turn red and you're stuck at it. And you get the full cycle every single time, every single intersection that you pass through. Sean, what you got?
You know, I cannot deal with the sound of like chalk, like a scratch.
Oh, like yeah. So cutting a knife on a plate.
Yeah. Oh, mm-hmm. or a chair.
Yeah.
Like when people are getting ready to move a chair in my house or like the table outside. And I don't think that's a slight inconvenience.
Mm-hmm.
But if you had to deal with that
constantly,
that's what I would pick to curse my enemy with, because I cannot deal with that. I have to cover my ears.
Yeah.
I'm like a 4-year-old.
Some of these answers are just brutal. 413, forever feeling like a small rock is in one of their shoes. 817, this one would be brutal.
Steal, wet socks.
Steal their cell phone charger bricks.
What's
my
that?
Gosh, if you had to just charge based off of like USB power, plug it into a thing. So they said steal all their charger power bricks. So they've just got the slow charge off of like a laptop USB or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, you only get up to like 7% then die, then 8% then die, then 7% then die.
Just brutal forever, that existence.
From the Franklin Injury's fan text, they said wet socks, jock itch, your shoelaces come untied all the time. You always feel like you have to sneeze. but you never do.
That's that one's pretty awful. Peyton, what's your answer to this one?
That they have to fill their car up with gas every time they want to drive. Every time you drive, you have to go straight to the gas station and fill up.
I would
so it's
that.
Like on the so you know you drive to and from work, so you got to fill up in the morning, then you got to fill up right after work. Every single time you got to do the full tank as well.
I do that driving home where I'm like, "All right, should I do this right now? And can I get away with it in the morning? I never am able to get away with it in the morning." And then it's a mad scramble because these gas pumps don't work. There's like two or three gas pumps around my house. They don't work or they're out of order. And then you're racing the clock.
Yeah.
There's additional traffic, but it's that lazy non-gas stop while you're on your way home after the show.
100%. All right, we're doing Ask right here. By the way, one more submission on the YouTube from Trenton Lowry. The curse is every time they leave a room, their belt loop gets caught on the door handle every single time. That would drive me nuts. All right, Peyton Russell, what's a bad movie that you still love?
Project X. I've seen it a few times. It's the big party movie there. It was out when I was, gosh, I think 15 or 16 in high school. It was Project X. You know, it's so stupid. It's just a party scene the entire time. Guys getting drunk, trying to get girls over, you know, in the pool and all that. But it's Project X for me.
Yeah, it's like the party version of Blair Witch Project.
Because I've never seen it. After that in high school, everyone was like, "Let's have a Project X. Let's do this. Let's plan this out." No one ever did it.
It was one of those ones where like everybody was always like, "Oh, is this really found footage?" Like, and it was so clearly not. I don't even know why that was a question. But it was. I don't know how you can see it multiple times though, Peyton. Like, if that's your pick, cool. I just don't know. Like, the novelty kind of wears off.
So we're saying we know it's bad.
Yeah, like it's one of these like it's so bad it's good, or like there's some nostalgia even though you know it's a trash movie. Chop, what's your answer?
Lake Placid, Cliffhanger, Maid. Very Bad Things, Dante's Peak, Congo.
You got plenty.
Plenty of them. I can watch those movies at any point that they're on.
Killer Clowns from Outer Space, 1990. It's an awful movie. It's, like the stuff that's supposed to be scary or terrifying. I think it's actually supposed to be sort of campy, but you watch that and I like laugh. It's like watching a comedy. And so I know how terrible it is. I don't care. I enjoy it. I love it. Lil MF Mason on the YouTube says Three Ninjas. I do have a soft spot for Three Ninjas from growing up.
Any Chris Farley movie?
Yeah. I mean,
any Adam Sandler movie.
Yeah.
Like, my corny and bad one is when he gets together with his, I know he has friends in all the movies, but when the dads get together, like Chris Rock, David Spade.
Oh, what's that called? Grown-ups.
Grown-ups.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'll keep Grown-ups on, even though I'm like, I know this isn't good. I know it's the same thing. I know it's the same cast, but I'll go ahead and keep that on.
817 says Pure Country.
Really for Selma Hayek.
817 says Pure Country. That's the George Strait movie. Back when he was at the height of his popularity, he had he did a movie that was really not very good. But
a lot of people giving credit to Encino Man.
Oh yeah,
and I hated it, and I hated Brendan Fraser as an actor.
It's such a bad movie. 972, Bring It On. That's my guilty pleasure movie, and I don't think it's bad. I don't think it's bad. I think it's a good movie. All right, we're doing Ask Reddit here on 105 Through the Fan. Sean Sharif, let's go ahead and give you this one. Who do you feel deserves an apology from the entire world? Say Nico Harrison. I know you want to say it today.
Ooh, who deserves an apology from the entire world? That's really, really good. My first thought was kind of going politically. I don't want to do that. I don't know. I'm struggling with that. I'm going to need some help. Who needs an apology? Who was right?
Peyton, you're Mr. Research all these questions. Who deserves an apology from the entire world?
It's clear. It's Nickelback. People hated them for no reason. Their music isn't all that bad, and people just crap on them. And now everyone now from here on out will forever think that Nickelback sucks.
You know what? That's a good answer because, their music, like, is it kind of cut and paste, and do they do the same thing, like, over and over again? Yeah. But, like, I mean, it's not terrible music. Like I don't think it's bad at all. I think the music is the one, to go. So, yeah, typically anything that's, like, Britney Spears, like, society destroyed her, I feel like. You remember the South Park episode where they're just, like, basically the media hounds, like, swallow her up? They ruined her in a lot of ways that we probably owe her an apology for her being as messed up today as she is.
A lot of people are saying Pete Rose in the Fantex, 972, 945.
Ooh.
Apology for what, though? I mean, he, like, admitted that he'd been on baseball.
And he dug in and lied about it for a long time. Now, probably deserve an apology for if they're going to put him in, they should have just put him in while he was alive.
How about Lewinsky?
See, she didn't do anything wrong as far as I'm, well, I guess she did.
Well, yeah, I mean, from a moral standpoint.
Morally, she did, yeah.
Yeah, she was probably more demonized compared to what others in the situation. Like
she was more demonized than he was.
She was like the top demonized individual in that thing, and she probably did not deserve to be the number one seed. In that. In fact, she didn't deserve to be the number one seed in that at all.
Who's yours?
Chop, you got one?
We wait to see how the tariffs turn out first.
Okay, we're going to go to the next one.
Well, no, I mean, it. But in that, that will be a fascinating one. And honestly, and I know today's not the day for it, a sick part of me is rooting for Nico Harrison to be right, just to be able to say he's got the all-time win and dunk over everyone.
Yeah.
Now, what would that take for him to be right? It may be a sentence that you can never complete. And it just, the answer is nothing. Like Bobby would say, just nothing.
Yeah.
But like, if they win back to back to back, Luka never wins one, I would look forward to being able to say I covered the biggest incorrect fan reaction in the history of DFW and maybe sports. Does that make sense?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a long play, but yes, that would be one of them.
Oh, here's your answer, Chop.
Lee Harvey?
No, EJL Viking on the Twitch has your answer. Trevor Bauer.
Ooh.
Trevor Bauer.
Or Matt Araiza, the punk god.
Well, Matt, isn't he back in the league?
Yeah, but I mean, he was demonized.
He was demonized, but like he was. That's the problem. Like, and
being allowed back to your job, I don't know, is the same as getting a collective apology or getting penance.
This is Michael Irvin's quote. You know, I want you to report it with the same intensity. You know, when he was, you know, he got accused of, what was it? Was it a sexual assault? And then they reported it like that. And then it was found that it was, he said, when this proves to be false, I want you to report it with the same intensity.
Bauer's a great text.
We were doing Ask Reddit here on 105.3 Fan. This was the most viral question this week and had the most fascinating answers, although it's a little morbid. Sean, how did that one kid in your high school die?
Good gosh.
I mean, it wasn't a kid for me. It was a teacher.
Yeah, I don't remember having a kid or a teacher.
No?
No.
We had one. He was a grade younger than me. I think he was 15. He was on his moped. And he got caught under a UPS van, and he got dragged, and that's how he died. We got to school the next morning, and I had no idea. I walk into school like, I'm always happy, you know me. I'm like laughing. What's up, guys? What's going on? And everyone's in tears, and I'm like, uh-oh, what happened? And
you were the last one to catch
it. I was the last one to know.
We had a kid overdose early on in high school, 9th, 10th grade for me. You know, he just one weekend was gone and never came back, and then they called people that, you know, kind of knew him into the counselor's office. It was this big thing, but yeah.
Yeah, mine was, like I said, it was the teacher.
Is this the one you dated?
No, yeah, it was the teacher. She died when I was 16.
So it was your mom?
Yeah. I mean, all the students made it. So far.
Ask Reddit every Tuesday. Walked right into it. Here, DFW Sports Station, commercial free. With the expressway. He takes off his headset like he's a performer at the improv. Just takes it off there, bowing on the fan cam. What about trading this number one pick for Giannis and getting your championship now? How would you feel about that? Next.
This podcast is brought to you by Mintz Tea Clinic. One visit can change your life. Mintz Tea Clinic offers a variety of men's wellness programs to help you meet your goals and keep you as strong as you've ever been. Call 972-GO-MINTZ-TEA today or visit MintzTeaClinic.com. That's MintzTeaClinic.com.